So I'll be talking about the 27th annual CSUN 2012, or as it's known on Twitter, number CSUN 12, and you can still find posts about that through that hashtag. To me, CSUN was a long time ago. It was actually February 27th, which is a Monday, through Saturday, March 3rd, and to me that seems like ages ago. So I'll also be talking about some other technology developments that have taken place since then. I've been attending CSUN since CSUN 2000, which was my first one, and it used to be in Los Angeles at the LAX Airport Marriott and Hilton, and then they had to expand because they kept running out of room. And for the past 2 or 3 years, it's been in San Diego at the Manchester Grand Hyatt, which they are able to get it all under one roof there. And then the area around the Hyatt, there are some more shops, and there's an area called Seaport Village that people can go out to, whereas when it was in LA, people were kind of just stuck in the hotels, or they had to go to the airport if they couldn't find something in a hotel. It is more expensive, San Diego, buying things, and sometimes the travel out there, but it is definitely a nice location. I would definitely recommend it. CSUN is kind of the premier US-based assistive technology conference, and more you're seeing mainstream companies participation, definitely some of the big ones like Google and Microsoft, but still you don't see a lot of consumer electronics companies or Facebook, and it's still largely kind of the accessibility teams and a little bit lighter on kind of the general product managers. The next CSUN, the 28th annual, will be Monday, February 25th through Saturday, March 2nd, 2013, which is a long way off. The website for the conference is csunconference.org. That stays pretty consistent. They actually have improved the website a lot over the years. For instance, now if you're attending and if you have an iPhone and you find a session that you want, you can add it directly to your calendar from the website. It'll put it in for you. I think that just came about this year. The website wasn't always as good, and they have definitely improved kind of the logistics of it. Another change that came this year was, in the past, once you registered, you would have to sign up for sessions, and if they thought a session would be full, they would tell you that you couldn't go in even if it wasn't full because somebody might have signed up for it 2 months before the conference but then not decided to actually go. They are gradually improving the logistics. If you want to talk to the people that actually run CSUN, the university out in California, the Center on Disabilities, their Twitter address is at CSUNCOD, which is again the Center on Disabilities. Let me just kind of give you a flavor for the week. The Manchester Grand Hyatt is a huge hotel. Since I've been going, actually, that CSUN has offered tactile maps if you request Braille in advance. If you're going to want Braille, one tip is to definitely request it in advance because it's costly to produce, especially the maps. I heard one person say that the maps cost almost as much as the registration, which is a good, I want to say it was about $455, so it's not cheap. That's just the conference registration, and then the hotel is fairly expensive as well. The maps kind of do list out the meeting rooms. It's kind of impossible to remember them all. There's a seaport tower and a harbor tower, and the meeting rooms are on primarily the second and the third floor of those towers. And I think it's great that they've tried to make these tactile maps, but I didn't really find, as a practical thing, that I could really use them to see where the rooms were. It would have almost been better if they made just kind of a list for each hallway or tower and what the order of the rooms are. They have names like Betty and Elizabeth, and sometimes you might see like Betty A and B, and that there's a little bit of rhyme or reason or order to that. But again, if there's like 20 or 30 rooms, you can't really easily remember them. And they could probably, for a lot less expense, kind of just create a list. The other thing that people kind of have been hoping for a long time that hasn't happened was that since CSUN is a technology-based conference, that they leverage something like the iPhone and make an indoor wayfinding test available. And that really hasn't happened for the most part at CSUN. Hopefully that will come in a future CSUN. Again, the conference runs Monday through Saturday, and on Monday and Tuesday they have pre-conference workshops. These are usually half-day or full-day workshops where they'll cover a topic in depth. It'll be anything from introduction to assistive technology, which is, you know, there are a lot of people that go that are just getting started in the AT field. There's usually a workshop on iOS devices, which is kind of basic usually, all the way up to something like using Aria to code your HTML pages. So you do have to pay extra for the pre-conference workshops. I want to say they're something like $200 for a half day and something like $300 to $400 for a full day. So those are Monday and Tuesday. I would say most people don't attend those as well, though there's a good group that's there. And if you do arrive on Sunday or Monday, there's plenty to do in San Diego because you'll be so busy once the conference kind of gets going. So if you can arrive early or stay a little late, it's a good thing to do. So Monday is pretty much only the pre-conference workshops, and the same thing Tuesday. The conference now kicks off with the kickoff reception is Tuesday evening, which is a change from prior years. It used to start off with a Wednesday morning breakfast that was at like 7 a.m. or something, if not earlier. But it now kicks off with this Tuesday evening reception and keynote. And I actually have a clip of that. I won't play the whole thing here, but I have a 5-minute segment of that that I'm going to get Audio Boo queued up on the phone here.
So who was the keynote speaker?
It was an actress with a disability.
Now, doesn't CSUN have different tracks, sort of disability-related tracks? Like, isn't there sort of a blindness track and a deafness track?
There is blind, low vision, deaf and hard of hearing, web, legal issues. And in the program, they all have three-letter codes, like the blind, low vision, or BLV.
First 5 minutes of the opening keynote, number 12, Gaslamp, San Diego, United States.
And it's in the Gaslamp District of San Diego. So I'm going to play that.
First 5 minutes of the opening keynote.
Beginning of Jerry Jewell's CSUN 2012 keynote from San Diego on the second floor, Elizabeth Ballroom. It's on my Audio Boo profile. I'm not sure if they actually have a better recording of it, you know, done through their sound system. They may not. That's kind of the opening keynote. There are some awards and things that are given out and talks by the conference organizers. Actually, Mike Paciello was the MC for the whole event for the opening. I actually arrived on Tuesday this time, just a couple hours before the opening address. And I'm always, it seems like with CSUN conferences in general, I'm always very busy with something just before it starts. I remember one CSUN was that time when I was denied entry into a Navy ship, and that whole situation was just happening right before the CSUN conference. When I went through the airport, all the TSA guys said that they had seen me in the newspaper, and I would tell them just check tomorrow's paper, which was literally the day that I left on that particular one was the one when we got on that second Navy ship, and it was in the paper the next day. This one I was preparing for the NFB state convention and had to get some things done right before that. I actually do like to go earlier, but it worked out well enough just arriving before the keynote. From Wednesday through Friday, there are conference sessions and the exhibit hall is open. And there are a huge number of conference sessions. And actually, conference sessions used to run through Saturday, and they've changed it back to Friday, probably because not that many people would come on Saturday morning. They did have another program going Saturday morning, but it really compresses the conference sessions. So they start at 8 o'clock in the morning and go roughly until about 5 o'clock. So you'll be looking at these time slots, and typically in a lot of them there'll be two or three different presentations that you would want to go to. They probably try to space out the blindness related ones, but they can only do so much, and a lot of the blindness, the web, and the legal are some of the things that we're interested in. So you definitely kind of can't go to everything. But the Twitter engagement at CSUN has really improved. You can follow the when the conference is going and after, the number CSUN12 hashtag. So you can be sitting in a session and you're curious about that session down the road about Windows 8 or the next thing at Google. You can read those tweets while you're trying to pay attention to your session. So it helps to multitask if you're good at that. A lot of vendors and companies are there. For instance, on March 1st, Google had a meeting room set up, and in the morning they had Chromebook demonstrations where you could sit down with somebody one-on-one and go over any questions you had with using the Chromebook. They had Chromebooks there. I actually went to that one. I had been involved with beta testing the Chromebook last summer. It's a Google netbook, essentially. It runs the Chrome operating system. It's a small netbook kind of form factor laptop. It basically works largely if you have an internet connection. So everything is stored in Google Docs, Mail, Google Chrome, the web browser. It's much simpler to maintain. You don't have to deal with viruses or Windows updates. It downloads updates automatically. If you need computers to do a very specific purpose, the Chromebook might be easier to maintain, less expensive in terms of licensing. This might be more if you had an organization or a business and say you needed 10 computers just for people to check their email. Windows can be a real hassle to maintain, and they haven't taken off, I don't think, in a huge way globally, but they definitely have their niche. And then in the afternoon they did Android phones, which unfortunately I missed because I was doing something else. I'm just looking at my notes here, and also we had a Heytel public relay set up during the conference. Those of you that use Heytel, it's a voice messaging app, and I'm actually going to play you a Heytel here. So it allowed people that were at the conference to sign up and record messages to each other. You would click within Heytel on the CSUN 2012 public relay, and you could hear what people were saying. With one of my Heytel groups this morning, I asked people, you know, now that CSUN has gone by, the way I phrased it was, what do you think was most important or interesting as you kind of look back on CSUN and the time after it. So I'm going to play one for you here from Tiffany Minosh from Sacramento, California. And incidentally, I started talking to her through the Heytel public relay. She's also involved with the NFB, but it was the Heytel relay that was the conduit that we started talking.
Recent messages.
So I'm going to
Tiffany,
play that
April
here.
14. New notification selected.
Good morning, Nico. The two things I think that I found really interesting from CSUN were Optolex new HD5 handheld video magnifier for those who are visually impaired. And those of us who are blind, the Braille pen was my favorite. Even though I know Freedom's coming out with something and Perkins had a mini, I really felt that the Braille pen was the best product out there, not only as far as the Braille being really crisp and easy to read, but also price-wise.
So Braille displays were, in fact, one of the big things at CSUN. I would say it's kind of more evolutionary rather than revolutionary. I think in the AT field, everybody kind of wants to come out with something similar at the same time, and a lot of companies were featuring Braille displays. As Tiffany mentioned, Freedom is actually coming out with a sleeker Focus 40 USB and Bluetooth display, and there was the Braille pen, the one from Perkins, which is a Seika display. That was kind of a trend at the conference. The pricing was relatively similar. I think the least expensive one was somewhere in the $1,000 range for the Braille pen, the $1,000 to $1,300 range somewhere.
That's a 12-cell display, right?
The pen, yeah. Another interesting thing I found was the LookTel Recognizer app. Now, those people will be familiar with the LookTel Money Reader. Just the simplicity of that app. You just open it. There's nothing to push or swipe or click on. You just open it and it reads your money. And that organization has now released this app called the LookTel Recognizer, which primarily what you do with it is open it and take a picture of something, and you record an audio label of what that is. Right now, they don't really have sharing of those labels. I think the look-tell recognizer is something that could be but it's not there yet. So you record something like maybe your tie or maybe the hotel shampoo and conditioner bottles. That's what we were trying to work on. So let me play the interview with the people from look-tell. Good afternoon from San Diego. This is Mika Paikala here at the look-tell booth. And I'm talking to EL, who's one of the representatives here from look-tell. And I'd say the recognizer app is one of the hotter products at CSUN 2012. So I'm going to let him tell you about it for just a second.
Right, so Recognizer is our newest app. We've just launched it at CSUN officially. Essentially what Recognizer does is allow you to point your iPhone's camera at an item and the camera, the iPhone will identify exactly what it is. So let's say you've pulled a can out of the pantry and you don't know, you know, if it's peas or carrots or corn. If it's in your database, you point the phone at that can and it's going to tell you exactly what that is. The way it works is we allow users to create their own databases, which is, you know, a quick 10, 15 second training process to take the image and then use your voice to label the item. And then once that's done, that item will always be recognized from that point on. So you can go do your shopping, you know, bring home your 40 items and just sit down, train those 40 items. It'll take you about half an hour. And from then on, those items will always be there. So you can think of this as a labeler.
If you bring your 40 items home from the grocery store, nothing is going to be pre-labeled with this. So they love to tout that feature, but I don't know that you would really use it for that. You would use something more like the Omni barcode scanner or red laser that has labels in it, unless you're really buying the same products and you have somebody that can help you get the labels into the database.
But one that you don't have to redo every time you bring your groceries home. You label it one time, and you know, from then on, anytime you buy that item, it's still going to be in the database. So you pull it out of the pantry, and you'll be able to identify it. People are using this for CDs. I've heard some people using it to identify which T-shirts they have. You know, T-shirts with graphics, and all kinds of other things. We're actually really excited to hear what the community's user recognizer.
And actually, with one of the other gentlemen I brought down with me from the Hyatt, the shampoo, conditioner, and lotion, and he took pictures of those items and we labeled them, and now I'm basically able to scan the section of the bottle that has the raised printing and it will say which one it is. And if you actually want to try that, if you're here or even if you're at another Hyatt, you could get in contact with me and I could email you the library, which my library currently just has those three items. I'm sure it'll have more, but you'd actually be able to really test that, you know, in actual field, you know, real world practice.
That worked in the look-tell booth, but then back up in the room it stopped working.
Bob, didn't you have a similar experience where bottles of spices that were so similar in appearance that only the branding of the bottle was so similar that
I thought it was going to be great because I have like 40 spices in a drawer and they're all from the same, almost all are from the same company. So the label is the same except for one says rosemary, another says marjoram or whatever. And I took a picture of the rosemary and I labeled it and I ran the recognizer in front of it and read it instantly. And I said, this is fabulous. This is going to be great. I don't have an omnidirectional scanner. I use other scanners, and those are, it's hard to find the barcode. So I thought this was pretty easy to orient. And then I did, basal, and I took a picture of it, and it worked. It said basal, and it was great. Then I went back to the rosemary, and it said basil. The item is so similar. Like, and I did it with two cans of soup, like a Progresso soup. One, there are two different brands, but the labels are almost identical, except for it says, one says, you know, chicken soup, or it has pea soup or something. It got confused between them. And I don't know, I may have to refine, maybe I have to get closer in and try and.
I found the same thing for the NFB state convention that just happened at the DoubleTree. And again, this wasn't done by a look-tell expert or developer, but we tried to take pictures at the DoubleTree of the bottles, which look exactly the same. You did the shampoo, and then you held the conditioner up, and it said shampoo. Mm-hmm. So,
do you know if it was aimed at the part of the bottle that actually had the, that said shampoo?
We asked the picture taker to do that, and I imagine they did.
You might be able to get closer to it. If I took a picture from a distance, so I got the whole bottle. I don't know if you got closer to it, that if it just read the word shampoo, as opposed to taking in the whole bottle, it might have a better shot at recognizing the lettering.
The bottles are clear, and the thing that says shampoo and conditioner is very tiny.
Oh, that would probably be impossible.
I spoke to the Looktel developers, and actually I got some of their contact information. But we already have devices that will tell you about your peas or whatever you have in your pantry. But we don't have something that will tell you about these hotel bottles, or when you get a new credit card from the bank, being able to scan it and get at least the number and the expiration date. I'm not sure that the three-number code is actually embedded on the magnetic strip. I tried to tell them, do something that's not out there already. I mean, I don't need something else to scan my peas or my soup. And people love to kind of bring up things that have already been done. I also have a sample of a session from Google here. This is talking to web developers, so it's a good idea of what a CSUN session would sound like. And they're saying, don't make div soup or span salad. So I'm going to play a little bit of that Google talk. I was sitting right by the window, and I think it was late in the afternoon, and you could really hear the traffic outside too.
I thought you were going to say we can hear you snoring.
That relevant parts of controls are grouped together in the DOM. If you have a drop-down menu button and you have the drop-down menu itself, they should be close to each other in the DOM. I see a lot of times someone has a button that you click on it and something opens, but the menu that opens is all the way down at the bottom of the DOM. So that means if someone accidentally ends up in there, they accidentally fall out, they're abandoned on the page. And this really makes things really complicated for a user who's navigating the DOM. So just try and make sure that things that go together are together. And the final one, and this is pretty obvious for web developers, but people still seem to keep breaking this rule, so use CSS for layout instead of tables. Layout tables are, it's so 1999, we've moved beyond that. CSS for layout is really important. So these are things that may seem obvious to many of you, but they're things that are really good to get right first. And if you get these right, it's a lot easier down the line. And these are essentially the principles of good design anyway. If you have a well-designed web page in the DOM, its very backbone is well-designed, then you have an easier time going on down the road. So this is an example. And I don't have a box, so I can't read it to you. It's still checking. I don't know what it's checking. So this is an example, and you can see visually this says, the rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain. So it's just a simple sentence. It looks like it's laid out right. But if I actually show you what the DOM looks like of this page, it's actually the plain in rain stays mainly in the Spain. And this is a silly example, and nobody would ever really do that. But if I had a screen reader that read this page, it would say, the plain in rain stays mainly in the Spain, which makes no sense. But the screen reader doesn't know that visually it looks different. All it sees is the DOM. So you have a user who gets to this page and gets something that makes no sense at all, because the DOM is different from what's visually on the page. And so this, you know, it's important to let go of the fact that visually is all there is to it. You have to also consider what is going on behind the scenes in the structure of the page.
And if you want to listen to the rest of that, we'll get you the link. I also want to play you a demo of another thing that I wrote down as a highlight of the conference, and it's an app that's not out yet, and it's called Just Typing, and the idea is to find a faster way for you to be able to type on the iPhone. If people are interested, there's also a new professional survey tool that's being developed because there have been accessibility problems with things like SurveyMonkey. And that tool is called A Survey. Jennison Assumption is involved with that. That people on Twitter will know who he is and elsewhere. Here it goes. Good morning. This is Mika Paikala from the Manchester Grand Hyatt in San Diego with a report from CSUN 2012 on a new prototype typing application for iOS devices. Its sort of code name is Just Type, although it's probably not going to be called that in the end. Essentially, it takes the touchscreen of the iPhone, and let's say you want to write the word computer,
normally using either the portrait or landscape mode, you would use the QWERTY keyboard and listen for each of those letters, C-O-M-P-U-T-E-R, etc. So with this one, the best way I can describe it is you kind of pretend that you're just typing, say, on a regular keyboard. So you just touch the screen where you think the letters would be for computer, but you're not listening to each letter. You're just tapping it really quickly. And then based on kind of where you press on the screen, that the system insinuates which word you want to use. And when you're done writing out those letters, you swipe to the right and it guesses the word that it thinks that you meant to type. And most of the time it's actually correct. I demoed this at the Sendero suite last night, which was in a very noisy place and, you know, a lot of distractions. And it actually worked pretty well. So it's kind of a faster way to write on the iPhone, which has kind of been the downfall of iOS devices in terms of quick access with VoiceOver, in terms of how rapidly you could enter text. This kind of reminds me of the app that's been in development regarding brailing on an iPhone. I don't think that one's out yet either, but it's kind of the same concept, I think. I haven't actually seen a demo of the one where you braille. Another consideration is whether it's going to be a regular or jailbreak app or both. Of course, if it's a jailbreak app, then you would be able to use it in almost any context. And if it's a regular app, you may have to, for instance, copy the text to the clipboard to be able to, say, paste it in an email or a tweet or a dictation field. So that could be kind of cumbersome. If Apple adds the technology to its own platform, or if it's a jailbreak app, then you...
So that was probably me talking about it the next day rather than doing the recording from the Sendero party. Some other highlights that I have written down, I think it was Victor Sarin tweeted a YouTube video, and if you're interested, we could look it up and play it. But it's called Sighted People Say to the Blind, and it was kind of funny.
Do you know Bob? He's blind too. How long have you been like that?
Hey, how do you know when to stop, you know, wiping?
Oh, I'm right over here. Nice to meet you.
You must have, like, superpowers, right?
Hey, how come there's Braille on a drive-through ATM?
Hey, when you're dreaming, can you see?
Yeah, I once knew a blind guy. He was homeless. How can you tell where you are? God, I'd love to date you. I'd never have to get made up again.
Oh, could you grab me that blue towel over there?
Did you watch Letterman the... I mean, did you hear Letterman the other night? If I was blind, I'd just walk around touching chicks' faces.
Hey, wasn't Al Pacino great in Scent of a Woman?
What, are you blind?
Can I call you Daredevil?
How come you're walking around holding his arm? Are you gay or something? You are such an inspiration.
Are you really blind or are you just stoned? Now, what are you, legally or illegally blind? Can you tell when a tornado is coming like animals can do? Have you seen The Artist? Hey, did the police ever hire you to help them solve crimes and stuff?
Well, at least you're not deaf, right?
Hey, if you could see, it would be almost normal.
That's brutal.
So Saturday, we went to the aircraft carrier and then out to dinner at... San Diego is kind of known for Mexican food. Sunday morning, I flew back and I was listening to Jonathan Mosen's radio show. I really tried on the outbound flight to find one with Wi-Fi, but I couldn't. I had three or four different flights booked. It was Southwest, so it's easy to change them, but I literally couldn't find one going out with Wi-Fi. But the one coming back did have it, so it really makes the time go by faster on those long flights. So I was talking to Jonathan Mosen and Bonnie Lanham. They were doing the radio show from Boston. I bought a bottle of water in the airport in San Diego, and then I scanned it using red laser, which is, as far as the non-blind, you know, the main world out there, that's the biggest app for kind of barcode recognizing applications. So you scan something and it checks the database through the network. None of this, like, having your own database on a card that's, like, old the day that you get it. Which, by the way, I think Envision America is coming out with a new barcode reader device, but I still don't think it's going to access the cloud or the network, which is too bad. I don't know if the design is etched in stone, but... So red laser, it could be anything from a bottle of water to an iPad. It'll first of all identify the item, and then it will tell you the best prices for that item locally based on your GPS or online. I scanned this bottle of water that I got at the San Diego airport, and it was some name that I had never heard of, and it wasn't available locally or online. So I think I tweeted that it must be a water that they only sell in the airport.
From what I understand, red laser visually, there's like crosshairs that you have to kind of like aim at How difficult it was to actually get it?
It varies depending on the item. I'll sometimes use my Opticon at home to see where the barcode is and then scan it. But sometimes I've been able to scan it even without doing that. But there's no feedback that, like, you're getting close or you need to move a little bit.
I think it does bing if you get it right.
Yeah, once you get it, but when you're moving around the package. I actually ran into a professor that was heading back on the same flight that kind of studies these kinds of designs, and we were kind of talking about some of the things that we saw at CSUN. Today, I put the same query out on Twitter of what people kind of wanted to say about CSUN, and Chris Hofstetter, who used to work at Freedom Scientific, says hello to Amy and everyone, and he wanted to point out access grade. Let me just pull up his tweet here. I'm opening tweet list, and I'm going to get my mentions, which is like people talking to me. Mike Paciello organizes a tweet up every year, and this year it was by far the biggest. Part of that, too, was they had full hors d'oeuvres and dinner and an open bar, so I've never seen it so crowded. But they actually have a neat website. I think it's just csuntweetup.com, and you're able to RSVP by sending a certain tweet or just saying that you'll be there. I'm actually talking to him to try to see how he does this, whether it's through some automation or manually, but they list everybody that RSVPs on that website. So if there's somebody that you want to meet or find out more what they're doing, you can do it. And this Access Grader website, you can submit a web page and the system will give you, it'll analyze it and it will give you what it thinks is a grade of how accessible it is. I think it's letter grades, A through F, I believe. And then you can also submit your own grade and comment, and they're hoping to crowdsource this and develop data about different websites and help entities improve their website accessibility. It reminds me a little bit about the Helen project that AFB did, and also an initiative that I think came from the UK called Fix the Web, where there were all these ways you could communicate websites that needed remediation, and they would try to contact the developers.
So, Mika, does this use the W3C standards as its tools for analyzing the websites?
Essentially, yeah. You go to I think it's accessgrade.com, mm-hmm. and then you punch in the URL, like you could put in boston.com.
I see.
And then it would grade their accessibility. And then you put in a grade and a comment. I have another new gadget to pass around. This is it's not really out yet, but it's called a Rivo, and it's essentially a numeric keypad for the iPhone that works over Bluetooth. So I'll describe it first. It's very small. There's a gentleman, Mr. Cheng Hock from Singapore, that's working with a manufacturer to try to develop this, and they don't really yet have a good website or a very easily understood manual. But basically you hold the device so the keypad is facing you, and underneath on the bottom side you'll feel a USB port, and on the left hand side you'll feel an on button. And then going from top to bottom on the left, you have left 1, left 2, left 3, and left 4, L1 through 4. The same thing on the very right hand side, R1 through 4. And then in the middle, you have your standard telephone keypad, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The 5 has a little dot, 7, 8, 9, and *0#. And then, of course, to the right of the pound would be the R4 key. So yes, it can be used for text entry or entering numbers or even just navigating on the screen, though there are a lot of kind of esoteric commands where you have to hold, say, the L2 and then the 3 to do something, and I played with it a little bit when I first got it, and I was reading he sort of sent me a couple emails with kind of the beginnings of the manual, but I haven't really found that I used it a lot. But I think especially people just getting started with the iPhone, especially to be able to dial phone numbers more quickly, it may be useful. I don't yet have a price on it. That will be coming around.
I know there are tons of podcasts that are done from CSUN. Where are the best sites where people can go to listen to interviews with different companies or reviews of products, that sort of thing?
I would say the best one is probably Blind Bargains, and they actually also now have an iPhone app. If you have an iPhone or an iPad or an iPod Touch, it makes their web content a lot easier to grasp on the phone, and I can
I think they have an audio section, so let me
I'm gonna
bring up the iPhone app here. And they do audio all year long. They do a lot at CSUN, but they do other things too, so I'm gonna check.
Line gardens. Classifieds. Tab.
So
selected. Garden. Selected. Gardens. Tab. 1 of 5.
These are the tabs along the bottom. So bargains is first, which is their general sort of feed of information.
Classifieds. Tab. 2 of 5.
They offer a free service where you can list classified ads for AT, and it doesn't have to be AT. It could be any other. It tends to be technology products.
Audio. Tab. 3 of 5.
Audio. We'll get back there.
Search. Tab. 4 of 5.
You can search, so you could probably search here for CSUN related interviews.
About, tab, 5 of 5.
And then about. So let's go to the audio.
Search, audio, tab, 3 of 5.
And see what their audio. Most recent content is.
Protect your investment within a Turbox case today. Link. Audio. Amy over
speaking
for
of,
event.
Speaking Link, of audio, did everybody hear Amy on the Tech Doctor podcast?
Yes.
Yeah, it looks like there are at least 30 individual product-related podcasts.
Number CSUN 12 audio, the latest with
on that tab.
Number CSUN 12 audio, nobility authoring cache for website
let's,
testing.
Let's one look at ago. This one, cache for website testing. I'm kind of curious about that.
Play audio, button.
Welcome to Blind Bargain's audio coverage of CSUN 2012. Brought to you by...
Are you willing to share your skills and knowledge of the workplace as a person who is blind or visually impaired? Become an AFB Career Connect mentor and help job seekers find their path to success. Sign up today at www.careerconnect.org.
Now, here's J.J. Meadow.
We are here at CSUN 2012 with Jane Shirk and Jennifer Sutton, and they are contracting with Nobility to set up a service called AccessWorks, and they're here to tell us about it. Welcome to Blind Bargains.
Thanks, J.J. It's great to be here.
Thank you, J.J.
So what exactly is AccessWorks?
AccessWorks is a project that is jointly developed by Nobility, which is a nonprofit based in Austin, Texas. They advocate for accessible technology, and so they're one half of the equation, and Loop 11 is the other half of the equation. Loop 11 is a company based in Australia that offers an online platform for doing usability testing. So what we call remote, unmoderated usability testing.
So usability testing as in far as testing for website accessibility and...
Yeah, it's usability testing is a little bit a little bit broader than accessibility. Like if a website is not accessible, it will not be usable by people with disabilities.
Right.
But there can be usability problems or issues with a website or with technology that are beyond accessibility. So if a website is hard for the target population to use, they can't figure it out,
right.
They don't understand the links of the language, then you have usability.
So what you're
problems.
Saying, it really goes beyond just strict Section 508 compliance.
Exactly.
It's more, does this website actually function for the average user, and can they efficiently... get to the material that they need to get to.
Exactly. Right. And then Jennifer wanted to say something.
So I was going to sort of describe, if we want to at this point, what that would sort of mean for your average user.
Okay.
So part of why we wanted to talk with you, JJ, is because we would like to encourage people who listen, people who are blind or visually impaired, or people with other disabilities who might follow Blind Bargains, to sign up to be participants in these tests. And what that would mean is you would sign up on Nobility's website at a web address that we'll give in a minute.
Okay.
And you would put in some information into a very basic form indicating what kind of assistive technology you use, how often you use it, kind of self-report, indicate, are you an advanced user, a beginning type user, what kind of user are you, that kind of thing. Fill out that kind of information. And then periodically, when there are tests available to be taken, you'll be sent an email that will indicate there's a test available. You click on this link that's in the email message.
Right.
And then you go and there's, introduction. This test will take about 30 minutes or whatever the case might be,
okay.
And you'll be asked to complete tasks. And so you go onto the Loop 11 website, basically, And on the Loop 11 website, there's a copy, if you will, of the real website that you're testing.
Okay.
And you are presented with tasks at the top of the page. So it might say, I'm just making up an example. You are on a library website, mm-hmm. and your task is to find a book called So-and-So in the children's section. And when you've completed this task, hit the task complete button. If you try to complete this task and you're not able to.
That actually I hadn't heard about until today, so it kind of gives you a sense of how big CSUN is, and there's definitely kind of smaller companies or initiatives that you don't hear about because they can't afford the huge island that, you know, something like Freedom Scientific or Humanware might have. There's also tends to be a lot of sort of focus groups kind of like that at CSUN. Google will often run focus groups where they'll test different things. They'll ask you to, for instance, try a certain task on their website or via an Android phone. So if consumers go to the show, they can definitely get involved in that type of thing.
Microsoft, were they there? Did they have anything?
There was a good deal of focus both from Microsoft and some of the assistive technology vendors like Freedom Scientific and GW Micro on Windows 8. And I think just as CSUN was getting underway, Microsoft released the consumer preview of Windows 8. So there was a presentation with Eric Damery that I attended with Freedom Scientific and JAWS with Windows 8, and then a similar one with Window Eyes. As we said in the Cero Talk podcast, I don't know that a lot of people were very excited about Windows 8. It still had a lot of work to do with JAWS and probably with Window Eyes, and reading some of the tweets, you know, people said that it may have some potential, but there's still a lot of work to do. And that was definitely the sense that I got from the demos. And they're not even sort of generally recommending now that people try it, which is kind of normal because they don't want to support it as of now. There are some improvements to Narrator. I actually haven't played with Windows 8 yet, but it was out there. But there wasn't a whole lot of excitement about it, I would say. A couple of other technology developments post CSUN that we'll get to as many as we can. One is the Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, RFBND, now of course called Learning Ally, has recently released an update to their iPhone app. I have it written down here around March 6th. And you can now download books directly onto the iPhone without having to connect to iTunes or do anything like that with a computer. The odd thing is that you can't search for books within the app. You have to search on their website, which you could probably load through Safari. When I tested it, I was actually searching on a desktop computer. And some books, you don't really buy them, you just request them and they're free, but you kind of put them on in a card and then you check out and then they go into what's called your bookshelf. In some testing, I found that some books became available right away and other books said that they'd be available the next day. So I'm not sure what causes that, but that's definitely a good development that you can download the book directly from the app. And then of course you can play it, and most of them have a markup so that you can move from section to section or page to page. There's also a company in Boston called Level Up, and it allows you to pay with your iPhone. You essentially put your credit card number in, and then instead of paying with cash or getting out your credit card, you open this app and it shows a QR code, which is a type of barcode. The merchant, for instance, the Cinderella's restaurant that many people go to after ViBug, accepts Level Up. They take a phone and scan the barcode on your phone, and then it charges your card and you get a digital receipt. There have been some accessibility problems with the feature where you enter the tip. With the Level Up app, you're able to independently enter the tip by choosing what percentage you want to tip, anywhere from 0 to, I think it goes up to 25% or 30%. And it has been sort of doable, but with some difficulty. And in their latest release, they've begun working on it, and I'm told that they have a release coming out within a couple weeks that will make it even easier. They are looking for feedback. You can email support@thelevelup.com, and I've recently been in touch with some of their people on Twitter. But it took a while to kind of get there, to get them to work on it.
For example, I use it pretty much every day at this coffee shop near my work, near MIT. Yeah, I forget how much I have to spend But you know, after every few drinks, I'll unlock $3 of credit, I believe, $2 or $3, so I can get a free free coffee some days.
And the first time you visit any particular merchant that accepts Level Up, you get a credit as well, anywhere from $1 to a lot of them are $5. They used to be more. You used to see some that are like 15, but I haven't really seen anything in
is
that.
Is it just food establishments?
No. I mean, it's a lot of food, but it could be other types of stores. Speaking of coffee shops, also, a lot of people might have been using the Starbucks mobile card application, which is a similar idea where you pay with the barcode instead of having to take out your Starbucks card. That app, by the way, the mobile card, is being phased out in favor of the general Starbucks app. And that was not accessible as of a couple of months ago, but we learned on April the 1st that the app is more accessible, and I've downloaded it and tested it. It now does work. I don't think it's perfect, but at least the part where you pay works fairly well, and you can also browse the types of drinks that they offer and find your nearest store and reload your card and things like that. There's also a new payments app through the company Square. Now, Square is known for, if you're a business or even an individual or a very small business, you can accept credit card payments through Square. So you get this little reader and you swipe the card and they take out a percentage, and you're able to take credit cards without some of the overhead that would have been involved before an app like Square. And there are some accessibility issues and workarounds with that, but they have this new app now called Square Payments. So you install it on your iPhone and you set it up and you take a picture of yourself, or you choose one from your library and you upload it to them. And then you search for business, you open it up and it searches for businesses around you that accept these Square payments. So some of the businesses that accept it, for instance, are the food trucks on the Greenway, like Clover and the Bon Me truck. So let's say you're near the Clover truck. So you open up Square and it shows you that Clover is so many feet away from you. And then there's a button that says open tab. So you click that and it opens a tab for you. And then when you go to Clover and you order your food, you just tell them Mika has a tab with Square, and they're able to, using the app on the merchant side, they see your name and your picture and they associate that and make the payment. So you don't have to use a barcode or give them your phone or, you know, do anything with the phone. They just make the payment since you've opened the tab. And there's also a way with that you can add the tip. All right, well, it was good to be able to present about these.
Thank you.